Welcome to the podcast that's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist, the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee here with Coach Chad Timmerman.
Hi, everybody.
And also with our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And today we're going to take more of your coaching questions, whatever has to do with cycling, coaching, triathlon. We'll do our best to give you the answers that you need. And you can submit those questions to us at support@trainerroad.com. You can, we'll put those questions into a queue and get to as many as we can every week. And you can find this podcast on iTunes. You can find it on SoundCloud, on Stitcher, and anywhere else that you find your podcast and listen to them. You can leave us a review on there as well. 5-star reviews are loved by us much. So leave us a 5-star review if you feel it's so merited. Thanks so much, guys. We got a lot of questions to go through. So we'll kick things off this week with Michael's question. He says, in 2014, I kicked cancer and was also diagnosed with an aneurysm. It was a crappy year, he says. My cardiologist suggests that I limit my max heart rate to 150 BPM. My previous max was around 170. So his question is there a way that I can train and maximize my fitness without pushing the HR as high as before?
So, Michael, now your maximization of fitness is going to be relative to that very particular heart rate constraint. So you're not going to be able to reach the same heights you used to, I'd guess, but you can definitely do quite a lot of work. And in terms of improving your general fitness, there's a lot you could do. I'd be willing to bet that you won't exceed 150 BPM at sweet spot output. And sweet spot, as you know, is really popular with us and it's a really effective place to train. So I think you can follow a lot of the plans and you'll just have to, you know, use common sense and recognize when your heart rate's scooting a bit too high. This probably excludes stuff like VO2 max intervals, and especially the longer ones. You might be able to get away with the shorter ones, although I think that's probably pushing it and will be something you'd want to run by your cardiologist before you even attempted it. But you're limited for sure, but you still have a lot of options. Sweet spot being probably your go-to workout for the shorter workouts with still a reasonable workload and a good physiological stimulus.
I would too ask your doctor. I don't know if he's aware of too much about, you know, how intense, because a lot of times doctors will say one thing for the general population, but then in terms of like actual like cyclist fitness, it's totally different. Like my doctor's like, you know, try to get at least 30 minutes of work. I'm like, working out. Like, are you working out? Yeah, I'm working out 14 hours a week. And he's like, what? Like, no wonder you're tired. You know, thinking the other way, that if you work out more, you're going to be less tired. And I would ask him, be like, okay, so my max heart rate's 150, but can I sit at 145 for 2 hours? Is that going to hurt me? Because he probably doesn't have other patients that do that. So kind of whatever plan you have, I would run it by him and let him know that you're intense.
Yeah, I was just going to say a great way to do that is actually show him your career on Trainer Road or show wherever you're aggregating your data like that. Show him that so then he can get an idea of your actual performance and he can see your heart rate and where it sits and he can see what's normal for you. I know I'm lucky enough to have a doctor that's actually an endurance athlete here, and the prescriptions for any type of rehabilitation or any type of condition that I have, they're always different. He might just be kind of feeding me stuff here, just making me feel better, but he's always like, he's on antibiotics or ones that I only prescribe to endurance athletes for a situation like this because it doesn't do X. And I go, oh, great. That's my
it's
ego
like
feels great. Exactly.
Just standard.
Exactly, right? It makes my ego feel great.
These are the super pills, Jonathan. They're special.
Yeah, we're getting dangerous with that, right? I don't want to get... but
hey,
no doubt.
Placebos work, man. They do.
They do. And I feel like my doctor... He knows and respects the great athlete that I am, right? So let
I want
it
a doctor that's like that. Yeah, this is the special medicine I only give to the special people.
Exactly.
It's really going to help. Like, yeah. Oh, I'm going to feel so much better.
I think Dr. Ferrari used to say that to Lance, so I should probably be careful. But
yeah, these are your vitamin D injections.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Ben's question. I worked my way through sweet spot based low volume and my FTP went from 207 to 211 and then to 215. I was hoping for slightly bigger jumps, but I know you said not to expect too much from the base phase right off the bat. I'm now 2 weeks into sustained power build low volume and a couple things have become clear to me. Number one, I find the VO2 max efforts such as Bashful, that's the name of one of our workouts, it's 60 minutes of 1 minute at 125% FTP and then 1 minute rest. So, and he said, I find that really easy. Number two, I find the threshold over-unders, such as Fang Mountain, and that's 75-minute workout, and the over-unders are at 95% FTP to 105% FTP, really, really hard. So both those rides are listed with an IF of 0.86. So that's an IF, for those of you that don't know, that means your intensity factor. So that's a way that we can use it. It uses power data and it uses TSS and all that other stuff, but it allows us to quantify how difficult a workout would be. If you rode as hard as you could for an hour, or I should say if you rode at your threshold for an hour, your FTP, then it would be a IF or intensity factor of 1. So in this case, it's 0.86. So it's a pretty intense workout. So he says both those rides are listed with an IF of 0.86, though Fang Mountain has significantly higher TSS. With the same IF, am I meant to be finding these rides just as challenging, or does it say something about my physiology that one is easy for me and one is hard?
Okay, Ben, so there's a lot to address here. First off, your changes in FTP seem a little slight to me, which kind of furthers the point that I'm going to make a little later, which I think you're lacking when it comes to the sustained efforts or your sustained power level. When comparing the two workouts, they do have the same intensity factor, but one is 75 minutes, the other is 60 minutes. The 60-minute one has really short but intense intervals. The longer one has more sustained and still pretty intense intervals. So the other ones for just about every rider, the Fang Mountain, the 75-minute jobber, is going to be a harder workout. And you're comparing apples to oranges here. The VO2 max workout, Bashful in particular, is kind of an introductory VO2 max workout. It's very friendly. You work for a minute and then you rest for a full minute before you hit it again. So those are going to feel quite manageable for most riders. This is kind of an intro to VO2 max work. Whereas the over-unders hold you at a high level of threshold and bring you above and then only slightly below it over and over again. So it's going to be stressful, especially if you're lacking in sustained power or muscle endurance, strength endurance, which it sounds like you are. So I don't think you're doing anything wrong. I don't think this is your physiology specifically. I think it's your metabolic fitness and that you don't have the ability to tolerate high levels of lactate. You're just not good at working for sustained periods of time at high levels of threshold. So this is just part of the improvement process, part of conditioning. Nothing's out of whack, not to my eyes.
You know, you're actually pretty similar, Ben, to my brother. He's actually just started doing structured training, and he's a mountain biker just an average mountain biker as far as what he does regarding like endurance or anything else like that, but he's an awesome descender. So he's never really focused on going up, and he's been doing VO2 max workouts lately and just been saying, this stuff is easy. And then he did one workout where he had to do over-unders, and he said that he was on the verge of puking about 20 times throughout the workout. So
I'm in the same boat.
Yep. And for me, and you know, actually our CTO is the same way. I remember he's like a rugby player, or at least he was before, and he can do VO2 max work and high intensity work for as long as you want. Not really, but you get what I mean there. And when we're talking about threshold work, that's where it's really tough for him. He targeted that though, and I remember he was doing that man plan thing with you, Nate. He targeted that with a lot of threshold work, and it did improve, but it should be difficult to see those adaptations come, right, Chad? I mean, you're kind of reversing how you operate.
Yeah, it's just, I can speak from experience in that when I address only VO2 max and I expect it to have this positive effect on threshold, but I don't do any threshold efforts or at least sweet spot and over-unders, my FTP doesn't change much. I get really good at doing those short efforts, but I don't see any obvious improvement in my more sustained efforts.
I also think that the shorter VO2 max are much easier, mm-hmm. in general, VO2 max efforts mentally compared to threshold ones. Over-unders, you know, the longer ones, it's just harder to put it in. And I can like gut it out for a minute on just about anything.
Yep.
And because it's counting down. But if it's 10 minutes, 15 minutes, it's you get in your head.
Yes. Yeah. And that's another thing. That's a good point, Nate. This is a good opportunity, Ben, to perhaps, and I don't mean to be presumptuous here, but perhaps to increase that aspect of your fortitude as well. Not just, you know, physical, but also mental.
And that's in racing. That's like
huge.
That's where it happens, right? Is there are some VO2 max stuff that will separate people, but it's the long, it's like there's 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes of mm-hmm. hard riding, and then there'll be a VO2 max effort, and people, it just pops people mentally.
Yeah, if you're a road racer, you'll have those VO2 max efforts, but the rest of the race, a lot of the time, like in a criterium, will be sitting at your threshold. So it's uncomfortable for sure. So you're doing the right thing. You're getting there, Ben. With patience, you'll get there. So Daniel, I've noticed that recently when I stopped training for a week and a bit, you said it's a recovery week and then a week of nothing. Over the holiday period, my resting heart rate steadily increased a few beats per day. As soon as I started training again, it began to come down. So his question is this normal? And then he kind of lays the scene as far as how he's measuring it. So we'll cover that first. He says, it seems to be opposite to what you've described in your previous podcasts. He said he's using a Fitbit Charge HR to measure it. The only thing I can think of is that I do all of my workouts generally at night, a few hours before bed. Although I would have thought that would cause me to have a higher resting heart rate after exercise. For background, I've been riding for around 2 years, training with Trainer Road recently, and you say that you've completed high volume traditional base and sustained power build, and now you're in the climbing road race plan. What do you think, Chad?
Yeah, so Daniel, first off, it's not normal. It's not typical, and it flies in the face of everything you expect to see as you adapt to endurance exercise. So something's definitely up. I only have a couple pretty weak theories. One is it could be related to something I don't understand. I know there's with diabetics, there you see interesting things with heart rate and heart rate response in with endurance training. But I'm going to assume that's not the case. You are talking about taking a pretty long training break. If you take a week of recovery and then you're off the bike for a full week, you could see some decline in aerobic fitness, which would elevate your heart rate a bit. And then as you start to train, it could start to bring it back down. So if your periods off the bike are in fact 10, 12, 14 days, you're going to start to see some decline. That could be what you're looking at, but that's just my best guess.
You know, I actually see this perhaps, like Chad said, not on such a compact schedule, I guess, when we're talking about like this quickly, but I'm looking right now at my resting heart rate data. And I'm sick right now and going through a crappy illness. It totally sucks. But going through something right now, and I'm looking at my resting heart rate. And of course, it's very difficult to see that because of the fact that I'm ill. That should actually change what I'm looking at there. But I have noticed that if I take time off, yes, your resting heart rate will steadily rise a bit. But it'd be strange to see it happen so quickly. Now, keep in mind, you said this is the holiday season. What were you eating? How did that change? How was your sleeping habit different? You know, there are a lot of different variables, especially in the holiday season, that come into play that perhaps you weren't experiencing prior to that. And that's the one thing with resting heart rate is it's informative, but if you don't have the variables controlled, it's not necessarily a be all end all metric. Like, you really have to make sure that you're trying to control the variables in your life before you can really truly rely on that data as gospel. At least that's what I've found personally. My suggestion would be keep watching your heart rate for a little bit. And as you get back into training, just measure it and see what happens with the heart rate. And if it drops back down to normal, then that's good. Hopefully you're not getting sick or anything else like that. We just put up a blog post on this, and hopefully it has some good insight for you, Daniel. It's at blog.trainerroad.com. So anything to add on that, guys?
No.
Cool. Dudley, I signed up for Ironman 70.3 in Mallorca in the beginning of May. That's the type of Ironman I want to do. I want to go to an island like that in Mallorca and do that. That sounds fun. A lot better than going to some flat place in the States here. I'm 48 years old, and this will be my fourth triathlon season. For the last two, I've been focusing on middle and full distances, doing two fulls and several 70.3s. However, since September, my training has been patchy. I had planned to start a 16-week plan in a fortnight. What does fortnight mean? I'm not sure.
2 weeks.
Gotcha. Perfect. However, I'm thinking about trying your specific plans, but I'm worried I will have only 3 weeks of base training under my belt before commencing. Should I change the build plan in any way, or just accept that I will be building from a lower base? Love Trainer Road, by the way. Best tech support guys on the planet.
Okay, so Dudley, you're targeting long distance triathlons, so base couldn't be more important, especially if you're doing full distance type work. So it sounds like you have 16 weeks, and then another two if you were to start right now, giving you 18 weeks. I would dedicate that first 12 to base conditioning. Don't even worry about specialization at this point. I'm guessing you're going to jump right into the build and then move on to specialty. But if the base isn't in place, you're missing some of the stuff that you're going to rely heavily upon when it comes to your basically long, slow race, slow being a relative term. So 12 weeks worth of base training, I think sweet spot base 1 and 2, depending on how much volume you can dedicate. Even then, it's probably going to be the better way to go. But you have to have certain things in place before you move on. So you're kind of putting the carriage before the horse here. And quite frankly, you could get away on little more than base training. You could take that all the way up 18 weeks, make it 18 weeks worth of base and head into your race and probably have a better go at it if you were to dive into your build and specialization training. So don't worry about the specialty, get your base and build in.
Chad, what if, so he said he's been doing, this is fourth triathlon season, and the last two he's focused on full and middle distance, doing two fulls and several 70.3s. Mm-hmm. If he hasn't taken a lot of time off and he's never really, you know, done anything but base,
sure,
could he possibly have already? I mean, I know a lot of Ironman guys that I know, all they do is zone two, right?
Yeah.
So he could be coming in with a huge base. Yeah, I know he actually didn't say that, but this is if someone else hears it who in a different situation.
Sure. So in that case, if you have a well-established base, if you've got years of experience and you've been through that ringer again and again, and maybe the performance has plateaued and you recognize you've got the fitness that you typically start with already, to start your build training with already, then why not? There's no reason. I'm assuming that you don't have much of a base if you're concerned with only having 3 weeks,
yeah,
meaning you're starting from scratch. But if you've got base established, then yeah, this could absolutely be a viable approach.
And then where would you have them start then?
With 16 weeks, I'd probably do all of the sustained build, or actually triathlon full or half build, and then move into the first 4 weeks or even the latter 4 weeks of the specialization so he gets the taper.
Cool.
Justin, I do all my trainer road sessions on magnetic resistance rollers using a Stages power meter. The setup is great for base training, but I find some of the build interval jumps are very difficult, especially sessions which jump from below FTP to 150 or 180% FTP. And the workout that he shares as an example of this is Trojan. And the way that Trojan looks is that you sit right below threshold, right there in your sweet spot range, and at the upper end of it, and then you just have sprints that go all the way up to 150 or 180. So just to give you guys a visual of what it looks like. He says, do you have any tips for using rollers for this type of session, or should I be using a turbo for this type of session only? He says, P.S., I love my rollers. I hope this is not the only solution to use a trainer.
Yeah, so Justin, I actually took a look at your workout file and it looks great. So in your case, it looks like you're making good use of rollers and you can actually hit those high numbers without, you know, knocking yourself down or just falling well short of, you know, what we're after with those short neuromuscular tags. So in your case, I think it's actually a great way to train. Typically, I like people to put themselves on the trainer so they don't have to concern themselves with things like balance and, well, balance really when they're, you know, really gassing themselves. Certain workouts are going to be able to get away with riding rollers. I think as you move into the harder stuff, the stuff that leaves you a little, you know, disconnected from reality, if you will, I don't know that I'd want to have to worry about keeping my balance on top of that. But you've made it work so far. It's no reason why you can't, you know, explore that a bit further.
Here's sorry, go ahead, Nate.
Justin, if you look at your workout too, because Trojans, their spikes, I'm looking at your workout right now, they're so short that if you zoomed out, they'll be a little bit smoothing applied to the data, and it might look like you're not hitting them exactly. But if you zoom in, I mean, a couple of them you fall a little bit short, but most of them you're pretty much right on. And that just, even on the trainer, that'll happen to a lot of people because that's a hard workout that you just did. So don't, you know, you can zoom in and kind of get a better feel for your data. But I agree with Chad, as I look at that, it'd be like, this guy nailed that workout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's one thing to keep in mind here too, that your average power will probably, so you're on a mag trainer, or I should say mag rollers. And by the way, I think I even generated the power curve for that one, Justin, and it sucked. It was like 3 hours on the rollers of just doing nonstop intervals. So, so you're welcome, Justin. On this one, I think that maybe what you're doing is looking at your average power, because like Nate said, when you zoom in after the fact, you're doing fantastic. If you're looking at your average power on those intervals, it will report low, but that's because you're picking things up to that peak, and these are not long intervals. So and just to give people an idea, these are 5 second sprints in the middle of a longer interval. So that's really short. So for you, you know, don't just assume that you'll instantly be able to be a robot of sorts and just pick it up and perfectly follow the profile. That's going to be normal. Having said that, it does look like you're having trouble hitting it anytime it goes up to 180% FTP. Sometimes you hit the peak, but sometimes it's more difficult. So, and it looks like, let me see if I can see your cadence at that point. Your cadence looks like it's at 92, so it doesn't look like you're spinning out or anything like that either. So perhaps
no,
if there's...
No, I see 124. 120,
102.
125.
105. Yeah, so it looks like you're spinning up pretty quick, which is the intent with this one. If you do feel like you're spinning out, Justin, then change that resistance dial. And then change, make sure that you just flip it over to the next setting so that it's closer to your rollers. And that might give you a little more resistance. Hopefully it doesn't compromise the rest of the workout. That's just kind of the nature of a magnetic resistance unit. It's kind of a bit of give and take. But yeah, good on you for using the rollers. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, and if I could add one quick note, Justin, thanks for the little links. It made it really hard, really easy to investigate your case in particular. So he attached a link to the trainers, to the rollers he's using, and a link to his workout. So all we had to do was click on it, and we could dissect that really readily.
Yeah, and in this case, I have to apologize. You were using your power meter. You weren't using the virtual power curve, so you have nothing to thank me for. My sacrifice is in vain. So, and don't, one quick roller tip, don't close your eyes, at least maybe just for me. Because when I was doing that, I had music in, and I got really into the music at one point, and I closed my eyes, and I didn't feel like anything happened, but I was on my shoulder on the ground, like in just 1 second to the next. So
yeah, here's a quick poll. Who here likes to train on rollers?
Not me. I think it has its place. It's fun from time to time, yep. But it's just another thing I have to worry about when I'm trying to work hard.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's a lot of fun, I think, after you get used to, you know, the quirks and everything else. Not as fun as watching people try to do it on YouTube, but it is fun. But the one thing about it is that I have never done a workout on rollers where I got... every time I do a workout on rollers, I don't give myself as good of a chance as I need to perform that workout with precision. In other words, what I mean is, like, if I'm on a trainer, I can generally really focus on my power output. And the one thing about rollers, and hopefully I'm not, Justin, I hope this doesn't upset you or anybody else that loves rollers.
You can't, people who like rollers, you can't change their mind. I just don't want people to be like, oh, I need to buy some rollers because trainer owned, you know.
Yeah. The one thing I would say is that rollers do not replicate riding outside. It's a totally unique experience. It's not the balance that you have to exercise and the control and everything else. It's very good for you, but it certainly doesn't replicate outside. It's just a very different experience. So it's just, I think that if you're doing workouts with less specificity and you want to work it in, I think that rollers are fantastic for those type of workouts. I see you nodding your head, Chad. I assume you agree with that.
Yeah, so. I think there's a handful of workouts that work really well with rollers, and I'm not trying to downplay the importance of rollers either. I think they're excellent in terms of teaching riders to ride smoothly and efficiently and in a balanced manner. There's a lot that can be taken away from getting good on rollers, but I think it has its place. Low intensity workouts and short workouts at that.
Mm-hmm. I like just using the trainer. I don't want to have any extra mental taxing where I have to concentrate not only on my power and digging really deep, but also staying on these rollers.
It's a great point. If you're looking at getting the most bang for your buck from your indoor workouts, in most cases, the large majority of cases, I'd say that a trainer is going to deliver better improvements in FTP, right? So,
agreed.
Tim, I have started the sweet spot based mid volume plan and will likely not have a chance to do both weekend workouts. So my question is, if I can do only one, should I do the Saturday shorter high intensity workout or the Sunday long and low intensity workout?
I think you've got your pick there, Tim, depending on how the week goes. If you carry a lot of fatigue into the weekend, I think the longer low intensity workouts are probably a better fit. But if you're responding well from the weekday interval workouts and you've got enough gas in the tank to do the Saturday workout, then the more intense, probably 90-minute workout, exactly as it's or pretty close to how it's prescribed, I think that's a better way to go. 3 days of intensity, especially if you're only riding 3 days a week, is going to be typically more beneficial. But again, if you carry a lot of fatigue into the weekend and you just can't hit your marks during that Saturday workout, maybe instead choose the lighter intensity, longer Sunday workout.
And that's, I echo that. I do. I'm in the same situation as you, Tim. And actually, one thing that I've done, which it's difficult. In fact, we were just talking about how schedules are going to get more difficult. But the one thing that's difficult for me is I actually scoot everything back. I don't train on Sunday. So I scoot everything so that my actual, my long, low intensity workout is on Saturday. And then on Friday, I have a shorter workout, still long, and it's still a rough workout, but that's on my Friday. So that's one option too. You could just scoot the whole thing, Tim, if that helps. Schedule pending, of course. So Rob's got a question that helps us kind of, I guess I should say, it's a good example of showing sweet spot base and traditional base and a good application of sweet spot base. He says, I'm a 47-year-old mountain biker, which, by the way, guys, that means he's a great person because he rides mountain bikes. So he says, while I like the idea of the traditional base plan's goals, I admit that I'm not sure if I'll be able to stick with it. I work from a home office, so when spring comes, I can ride outdoors 3 to 4 times a week and would prefer that to a trainer indoors. We can't blame you on that, right? It's always fun to ride a mountain bike outside. Is there a plan or group of workouts that I could start that would help me build up my fitness for the spring in a shorter time? I have to say I've been off the bike for over a year now and just trying to get prepared for spring using Trainer Road with a kicker.
Yeah, Rob, this is exactly why we have the sweet spot based plans, because they're quicker fitness. And for events like mountain biking, where you have all sorts of different demands, they're a lot more varied than the traditional base approach. So I think the sweet spot base is, just for probably about 5 different reasons in your case, a better fit for you.
You know, and Rob, I would suggest this because I sympathize, and I know Nate just got a fat bike and he's recognizing how fun it is to ride mountain bikes. Chad has mountain bikes. He's ridden them for years. We all feel you when you say I can ride three to four times a week and would prefer to do that to a trainer indoors. And I'm Rob, I'm as like the most outdoor person ever. I just want to be outside at all times, whether it's backcountry skiing, whether it's getting lost on my mountain bike in the mountains. I love it. But what I would recommend to you, and if you want to see the best fitness gains, is you do a low volume plan. You just do your structured work. Keep it, you know, the workouts are probably going to be an hour long, anywhere around there. You do your hour on the trainer, and then if you can, you get outside after that. And if you do that and, you know, reserve those weekend rides for something longer outside, and if you can get out during the week, you're not only going to be a faster rider, but it will make the trails more enjoyable. You'll be much more fit, and that always makes, whenever you're more fit on a trail on a mountain bike, it makes it more fun.
My plan for the summer with mountain biking is, you know, the weekday interval workouts, and on the weekend probably have one day inside before the kids get up, and then another one outside, and that's if my schedule permits, because it always takes me longer to actually mountain bike because I have to drive a little ways, get to it, and if the wife gives me permission, if the day turns out that I can have a little, you know, 2 or 3 hours to myself, then I'll go outside, and if not, I'll try to do a 90-minute interval session where, you know, you cut the time in half and you can still have a kid in the room with you, you know, while you're doing that, and they can play with their toys and they like watching to see dad on the trainer.
Yeah. Hopefully that advice helps you out, Rob. Marco, hi, I just entered into fourth week of traditional base mid volume 2. So he's just going through, he's about halfway through there. Wondering if I can skip into a build plan or the last 4 weeks of sweet spot base mid volume 2 after this low intensity week that he's in right now ends. He says, or should I just stick with and finish traditional base mid volume 3? So he's actually getting close to 2/3 of the way through mid volume or traditional base, right, Chad?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So he's wondering if he can jump ship. He says, there are some races coming sooner and I made some planning mistakes. So that's hence the purpose. Most of the races I participate in are short XCO or road events that are usually in 1 to 1 hour 30 minutes, but there are a couple of marathons with more than 3 hours.
Yeah, so prior to that little bit of knowledge, I'd say you can do whatever you want. I mean, mix it and match it. It's depending on what you're after. With you, you're after short, intense races, and I think the traditional base approach is probably not the best way to go. So I advocate jumping ship right now. It's up to you whether or not you want to, depending on how much time you have before these races start, complete 4 more weeks of sweet spot base before you start your build, or if you want to just dive right into your build, depending on your scheduling. But for this type of events you're doing, sweet spot base is a better route. And even when it comes to those 3 hour rides, or even 3 hour plus rides, the conditioning you get from what is a shorter, higher intensity approach will carry quite well. I've done it for years and I can attest to it personally. A lot of the athletes I've coached, same thing. We're on pretty limited schedules. We can still do those occasional 3, 4, 5 hour races.
And I echo exactly what Chad said. Marco, you and I do the same style events, cross country Olympic and road races that are generally, generally shorter road races. So yes, you've already got a good amount of base coming in too. So don't worry, you're switching over right now. That doesn't derail anything. It's a progression. He also says, PS, great work on the podcast. Keeps me occupied for an hour on the trainer. Good to hear. Nice. Simon, I think it's Simon or might be Simone. Or Simone. I don't know. Forgive me, Simon. Yeah, the triathlon plans both build and specialty already plan the inclusion of races at the end of the 3 rest weeks. What if I want to do more B and C races during my build and specialty phases? How do I need to adapt the training for those?
Yeah, so we take a pretty standard approach to, if you're on an ABC priority events, that the C races can figure into your base conditioning, especially if you're going the sweet spot track. B priority races can figure into your build conditioning, and then you save the A's for when you're, specializing and your fitness is topped off and you're just starting to kind of hone it. So in your case, factor them in whenever you want. Just make sure you're not over racing and putting too much intensity into the week. So if your training response, your fitness is coming up with the, insertion of a race in place of a workout or two here and there, then why not? Just as long as you're kind of staying the course in terms of basically improvement, but more specifically the workouts that we prescribe. So, you do a race, if you really gut yourself, you really lay it all out there, then you rearrange your week so that you have enough recovery so that when you dive back into your training, you're still on track. If you just kind of noodle through it, maybe it's a C priority and you're mostly doing it to practice your transitions or just to get familiar with racing again, it might just replace that day's workout and then you can move on from there.
I've also seen some of the best triathletes that I know, let's say during base phase, they do a race because racing's really fun. It's a sprint. They get done in just a little over an hour. Well, if they had a 2.5 hour ride, they will just right after they're finished running, they kind of drink something and then they'll get on their bike and go ride some more because they're already all set up and everything's ready. And there's probably a closed course that they can, some kind of roads that they can ride on that are good, or they will, just go do a longer run, cool down run, something like that to kind of increase to be more specific for what kind of training you're doing. And that, again, not everyone has to do that. That's kind of a higher end tactic, but have you guys ever done anything like that where you do a race and you're C and then you kind of go ride more afterwards?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, plenty, especially if that's what my training schedule dictates. I mean, I'm not a slave to my schedule. I mean, if I kill myself in a race and I'm just spent, but I'm supposed to do 3 hours and that was only an hour long race, I call it a day. But if for whatever reason I still have it in me and I still kind of want to stay the course, then I'll do the race, or maybe even ride to the race, ride home sort of thing. But yeah.
I've seen you do that to a time trial. Has done like these, we have like these 7 mile time trials out here on a Tuesday, and they're about a 25 minute drive out of Reno. And I see Chad on the side of the highway, riding with his aero helmet on with a backpack, and you see him ride back.
And I win too.
So Justin Rossi's not racing. Wow. That's the example. That's a great example. Is there's a seven mile time trial. So you're doing that in 14 minutes,
exactly.
And it's not enough stress. So you're going to add more stress and not just skip a workout.
Yeah, a good example of this, another one, and I know you're a triathlete in this case, so perhaps it doesn't totally relate, but hopefully you can recognize the principle. We have a Criterium series. It's the same Tuesday night series that Nate mentioned, and as I get into my specialty phase, I'm still doing those races, but they're C-priority races, and they are not enough to substitute a workout at that point in most cases, so generally what I do is I will show up to the race, and they have C's and B's and then A's. So I'll actually ride with the C's just off the back. I don't want to mess up the race or anything else like that, but I'll ride with the C's, I'll ride with the B's, and then I'll ride with the A's, and then I'll ride home. And if I do that, then I've got a big day that I've done there, but it's generally lower intensity stuff until the race, and the race is very intense. Another thing too, I know I don't know if you're hunting for B and C races, but there's a local triathlete called Matt Balzer, and he's an Xterra champ, multi-time Xterra champ, really good rider. really good runner, swimmer, the whole deal. And he shows up to road races, and after we're completely smoked on a Tuesday night road race, he goes and runs and makes us all feel terrible about ourselves.
He just won age group nationals, right?
Yeah.
Was that 2 years ago?
I think he's won worlds. So, because he's in Maui. Yeah, yeah. He's
but he's an amateur, though, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's an incredible athlete.
I know every place says they're fast, but I feel like Reno is fast. And in that A race that Jonathan does, there's like two guys that consistently race there that have Masters National Crit Champions. Or was Road? There's many national champions that you race against.
Yeah.
And
Reno turns out a lot of national champs.
Yep. For all those that are listening, you should come out and ride with us. It's a lot of fun. So, Martin, I've recently acquired a power meter and I'm considering signing up for Trainer Road. I have two questions. As well as turbo sessions, I like to road ride and also aim to do at least 100 miles per month. How would I build this into one of your workouts and make the necessary adjustments to the plan? So let's take his first question first.
So Martin, I'm guessing you mean just additional mileage on top of the intensity that you're doing with the plan, in which case you can just fit that in wherever you want. So if you're doing Tuesday, Thursday intervals, then maybe save your mileage for Wednesday, Friday and the weekend. Pretty straightforward.
And one thing I'd point out too, Martin, you say that you just got a power meter and that your goal currently is to do at least 100 miles per month. My guess is that your goals will change now that you've got a power meter, from going from just a cumulative in specific metric like distance. Soon you'll have goals for TSS every week or every month.
Now, Martin, if you like to ride and those 100 miles are just because you want to get out there for, you know, several hours every week, that's one thing. But if you're riding simply to accumulate mileage, I think you're a pretty powerful lesson is in store for you, where you're going to start to see that you don't have to ride a ton to get quite a lot faster.
Yeah, everyone who's listening who used to ride by miles and now rides by TSS and you know what kind of rides you're doing, they're probably laughing to themselves. And Martin, here you're going to, a whole new world's coming to you with a power meter doing interval training.
It's going to be great. And having said that, I mean, our filmmaker, Dave Christensen, he has a lot of power meters. So, but he still loves his distance goal. It's not what he structures his training around, but it's just kind of a neat thing at the end of the year for him. So it's not that we're saying that that's bad to have that, but it's perhaps not the best way to structure your training. But you'll figure that out, which is really good. Number two, his next question, Chad. He says, a similar question. I frequently work away during the week and my diary is very unpredictable, meaning his schedule. Again, how would I take this into account and how would the software know how to adjust as often when away, I won't be able to record power. So he says that he'll always be recording with heart rate. Chad, what do you have to say?
There's nothing, I'm not sure I understand the question perfectly, but there's nothing our software is going to do to compensate for this. Without power out on the road, though, you're going to have to kind of ride by perceived exertion. Heart rate, you know, it can be useful to some extent as well. But in any case, the more work you do indoors and the more you learn about training with power, the more you start to associate your sensations and even heart rate with certain power levels, you'll be able to kind of dial in your workouts outdoors. As far as integrating those outdoor workouts into our software, that's coming, but that's not in place just yet.
Yeah, and one thing, you mentioned that you're getting a power meter, Martin, so, and you say that you it looks like you travel a bit. So I don't know if you have a bike that you carry like a travel bike and that one won't have a power meter on it. I assume that's the case, but if you do have a power meter, then the benefit of that is you can track all of your workouts inside or outside. That's hopefully that gives you the information there that you need. Peter, hey there, I've really enjoyed Trainer Road and I can already see the improvements in my cycling ability. Up until now, I've been following the traditional base training plan, the mid and high volume versions, in preparation for my full distance Ironman race in August. Recently, I saw that there has been a new full distance triathlon base training plan added. My question is, after reviewing the bike workouts proposed for the mid volume plan, I notice an increase in intensity and a decrease in volume, except for those Saturday rides in the plan. So his question, what is the benefit to taking this approach versus the traditional high volume, low intensity base training? Traditionally, if being strapped for time is not a factor, is the new full distance training plan still the route to take, or should I continue with a traditional base? I appreciate the help and great app. Thanks.
So, Peter, the new triathlon plans were devised for triathletes. So I took into account the fact that they're not just riding the bike, but they're also swimming and running. So because of that, overall riding volume comes down. The traditional base plans are all about riding. They factor in no time for really anything else. And it's up to each rider to determine, you know, what else they're going to work in if they work anything in. But those base plans are aimed specifically at cyclists. So when the training volume comes down, as it does in the case of the multi-sport plans, the intensity pretty much has to come up if we're still going to achieve the same intended training adaptation. And that's basically what it boils down to. If you have a ton of time and you still want to ride the bike a lot, you can do the traditional base approach, especially if you're a full distance triathlete, and then just work in the swim and workouts as you see fit. Personally, I like the format that favors intensity over duration pretty much 99 times out of 100.
And I kind of see I guess more hesitation with triathletes in a lot of cases here, Chad, mm-hmm. than with cyclists, right? To going from that low, long to high, short type of approach.
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of the established paradigm, and it's a tough mindset to break, to learn that you can still be a really well-adapted aerobic athlete by doing high-intensity work. The fact of the matter is it works exceptionally well. And there's evidence all over the place, both with our riders, our athletes here at Trainer Road, and just a whole lot of research that backs up the matter that you don't have to train a lot to be fast. And that goes for long, slow distance athletes too.
Agreed. Nate, you're a long distance triathlete, and you haven't shied away from high intensity stuff, right?
Yeah, and I think that I would just, the amount of time, I know he says he doesn't specifically have a time problem, but to do that many hours on the trainer that are just long, slow, and then go run, you know, maybe 30, 40 miles a week and then swim on top of that, I just would not have a life. So it just sounds really hard to do traditional high volume and then bike or swim and run at the same time. I would rather have all my workouts be much more efficient and still be able to race extremely well. And it's not like I'm just doing the traditional base is not like it's just VO2 max. I mean, you're building your threshold and you're also doing longer rides. Mm-hmm. It's just not all lower zone two kind of stuff.
Yep. Forgive me if I butcher this name. I think it's Greek, Fragiskos. I hope that's right. he says, hello, guys. First of all, and Fragiskos, I think that you're an ad guy for us here. So first of all, I would like to highlight what a fantastic job you are doing, providing us the opportunity to make the best of our indoor training. Making every minute of our training time count. That's our goal. That's good stuff. Moreover, your podcast sessions are very useful and provide essential information and guidance for making the best out of our training time available. So 5 stars for that.
Yippee.
Good stuff. So now we get into the circumstances and his question. He said, I've used Trainer Road for more than a year now, recognizing a very valuable tool to make the best out of my indoor training during the week, as I am trying to keep up also with my work and family schedule, as probably most of us do. At the same time, I really enjoyed riding my bike outdoors during the weekends and long 4 to 5 hour team rides with my local club. That being said, I have recently completed your mid-volume traditional base plan with a combination of relevant outdoor rides during the weekends. I'm periodically testing my FTP, as in your prescribed training plans. But at the same time, I'm recording and inputting my power data in a training software, and that's called Golden Cheetah, is the one that he talks about. From that perspective, I can see about 10 watts difference in FTP from the input I get from the training software compared to the effort on the indoor testing protocol. I would like to note that my indoor FTP sessions are really 100%. And I'm not really sure what you mean there by 100%.
I think he's saying when he assesses FTP, he really pushes.
Okay, cool. Perfect. So now to the question, is this normal? And should I use the value regarding FTP that I get from the training software to my Trainer Road indoor sessions?
Yeah, I'm not sure where the disconnect is here. Honestly, I don't know if Golden Cheetah looks at the raw data and interprets a different FTP for you.
No, I think what he's saying is, and this is very common, is outside my FTP yep. is 250, but inside my FTP is 240. And in general, this is So this gets brought up a ton on forums, right? And there's people kind of pick different camps. Some people are like, if it's 250 outside, you have to do all your workouts inside at that same 250. Some people like request software to have multiple FTPs so they can track TSS differently. The camp that I'm in is this. I had the same experience as I before I met Chad. I did a bunch of workouts outside with my power meter, and I really had a good basis of my FTP. And then inside, I assessed lower than I would. And we've talked about it before, but I thought it was due to trainers having a lower inertia. And it didn't mimic the outside as well. And I was kind of a high inertia rider. So I went through and I did Chad's training program and his classes. And my FTP indoors went up like 35, 40 watts. And then outside, I would have these really specific intervals that I would do. I was pretty much only doing 2x20s and 3x15s. That also went up 35 or 40 watts. Mm-hmm. I increased proportionally the same either way. I don't know... I don't have any studies to back that up. I don't think there have been any studies that tested that, but that's my personal experience. So in general, I would just say test your FTP inside, work really hard, make sure that your workouts are hard, and then train outside as hard as you can too.
Yeah, I noticed that there's a difference in my indoor and outdoor FTP, but I have gotten those two numbers a lot closer over time, and I hope to make them perfectly the same over time.
Me too. They've gotten closer over time.
Yeah, me as well.
Yeah, and I think that's something that a lot of people, just from the get-go, they'd recognize a difference, so they just get in their mindset that you have two different FTPs. And the fact is, you don't have two different FTPs, right? Like, your functional threshold is what it is, but your ability to perform indoors or outdoors may vary. And that could be based on so many different factors.
Yeah, the big ones are cooling. So if there's a big disparity and you're just noticeably weaker indoors, first make sure that not just the room's ambient temperature, but more the airflow. Get a good fan, get two of them, train them on you. If you're cooled well, evaporatively, you're going to have a better chance of matching your outdoor FTP. And then there's also, like Jonathan talked about, like all of us have talked about, these indoor-outdoor FTPs have synced over time because we've gotten better at riding indoors, or at least adjusted to the mildly different stress that comes with riding a trainer, which really has no downtime. Short of backpedaling, you don't get those little micro rests that you get outdoors. So whether you recognize it or not, when you ride outside, you're getting substantially more rest. Even though they're incredibly short little periods of rest, you're accumulating more rest time over the course of like Nate's 2x20 workout. Whereas if you did that indoors, there is no rest at all. It's a very steady effort, and it takes a bit of learning, a bit of adaptation, both physiologically and psychologically.
That's a good point. As I'm sure listeners can attest to this, who have done significant amounts of indoor training, is your FTP might be higher outside, but then you start doing these intervals inside and it might be a little bit lower, but you actually gain more fitness than you mm-hmm. would when you were doing the same kind of things outside. Mm-hmm. As Chad said, the trainer is fantastic. It's just relentless. There's no hiding. You know what I mean? There's no those little downhills that give you... That's one problem is why I went to Chad's classes is we had an area called Verdi, and I would do 20 minutes, and it was extremely hard for me to find 20 minutes where I wasn't spinning out, or there'd be like even a stop sign where I had to take a right turn and it's a 10-second break, and you have like three stop signs during it. Well, 2x20 with three 10-second breaks are way easier than 2x20 with no breaks.
Yeah, and one thing to keep in mind too, and with me... I am very much aware of my mental fortitude and how that affects my performance. And when I'm riding outside, I find it in almost every situation easier to push for something, whether that's catching another rider, whether that's just, being outside. Like I already said, I love it so much. I don't know what it is, but it's a different mentality many times when you go inside and outside. And once again, with time, hopefully, all of that tends to blend into one, which is just your performance on the bike. Ideally, that's what happens. So he says, and he asked there, any suggestions, remarks, or guidance on how I can make the most of my outdoor sessions and combine them with your prescribed training plans are more than welcome.
Yeah, I'll just give you the typical answer. I'm not even going to say your name. and that's that I prefer that riders do their quality work indoors and their quantity work outdoors. And that's not to imply that the outdoor work isn't of merit, just that the structure, or the lower structure, or maybe even lack of structure is a lot easier to get away with outdoors. But when when you're indoors and you have a pretty complex workout, and some of these get really complex. I mean, 15 seconds on, 15 seconds off, 30 times over, rest for 5 minutes, do it again. That's a hard one to replicate out on the road. So save that tough stuff for the trainer. And not to mention the upside of a trainer that locks you into resistance or gives you that direct feedback, and all you have to look at is your data. You don't have to concern yourself with all the other things that are going on the road. So tough stuff indoors, less structured stuff outdoors.
Casper has a question. He says, "Hey guys, fantastic podcast. We are," and when he says we, he's referring to his team, the Geronimo cycling team. He says, "We are having a preseason training camp with our cycling team," and he says, "from Friday afternoon to Saturday evening in the first week of April. Our team consists of competitive Cat 2 riders, 6 to 8 members, and more recreational riders, 4 members. Our camp is both to have fun and get in some quality sessions." So I assume that what he's going to ask us is how to structure the camp, and that's going to be that differs a bit from what we do. So maybe we can just share some insight on this one. He says, number one, what would be the best approach of structuring this camp in terms of sessions, duration, what kind of training? And he gives long endurance or intervals. And would you go for intervals first and then the long endurance ride afterwards, or opposite? So he says, potentially we can see, or we see that we can have 2 to 3 quality sessions, a couple hours on Friday afternoon. And then he says 3 to 4 hours on Saturday, and then maybe another 2 hour session on Saturday as well, or just combining it all into a 4 or 6 hour one. So Chad, you've been to training camps. I've been to training camps.
Yeah, this is the one thing I'm not sure. Is this an indoor training camp?
No, yeah. I think it's outside.
Oh, okay.
I think so too. Yeah.
I'm just going to jump to that second question. How you structure this is very much up to you and the goals of, you know, what type of races you're doing, how much time you want to spend out there. There's a lot of variables here. In terms of structuring them, though, you want to get the harder stuff done first while you're freshest and you're still capable of meeting the high-end requirements, and then the endurance follows. So Friday... I'm not even going to, there's just so many ways to go about this.
I'll give some ideas.
Jonathan, have ideas. Go ahead.
So what I would do is so training camps, it's got to be about fun too and building camaraderie. So that first session, I would do some, I would have that be intervals, and you have some faster guys and some slower guys. And if you can have some hill climbs or some hill races, what I found is fun before is you time everyone up, right? And they go up the hill, and I don't know how long you want to do the hill, 3, 4, 5, even if it's 20 minutes or probably less than that. And then you find everyone's what they do. And then you give offset. So if Jonathan beat me the last time by 30 seconds, well, I'm going to get a 30 second head start on Jonathan for this next time. So that this next time when you do it, everyone's kind of finishing together and you get to this like really fun, we're all going to gut it out. Then you time it again. Let's say Jonathan beat me by 10 seconds. So the next time is going to be 40 seconds off for Jonathan. And you can do hill repeats that time. Everyone's going to push really hard. You're not, you know, just this long strung out thing where all the Cat 2s are by themselves and all the other guys are by themselves and no one's ever going to see anybody. But that's a cool kind of way to do hill repeats and get some interval work. And then I would break up the Saturday into 2 sessions. And I would do maybe a group ride where... some of your Cat 2 guys can help pace for the more recreational riders, or you can break off into 2 groups. And then session 2, I would probably find some other fun way to do riding. There's some, you know, if you find a place you can do laps, you can do some kind of crit races, or you go, you know, teams of 2, and you put some of the Cat 2 guys with the recreational riders, and, you know, both people have to finish. Just things to make it, you know, don't be like, oh, what's the maximum amount of fitness I can get? But it's like, what's the way to make this really super fun? And if you're having really super fun too, these people are going to dig deep, and especially those recreational riders will probably dig deeper than they would normally riding with some Cat 2 people. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree with that. Try to find ways to build camaraderie and skills within that too. When you're out there, work on pace lines, work on different strategies that you would employ in a race. And not only for the Cat 2 guys, but get everyone involved so everyone's on the same page, because everybody can learn in that situation. It can be really beneficial. Like Nate said, if there are certain riders that need to be or have more expected of them, structure things so that they're doing more of the work. In other words, if you guys have a pace line going for a while, that's great. And then after that, just set it up so that just, you know, your Cat 2 guys are rotating at the front and just them, they're pulling. And then after that, you know, 10, 15 minutes later, everyone jumps back in and keeps going. So kind of like pace line intervals, if you will. Work that stuff into it. You can even, and I know this is only if you have time to kill, but if you have time to kill, the best way one of my favorite things to do with a team camp or getting anybody together like that is to do skills drills, because it takes a lot of the guys that have big power and it knocks them down a notch. So then they don't have too much ego, and it takes a lot of people that just, you know, you can find a drill that makes everybody look like a fool right on a soccer field and try to play garbage ball or something like that. That's a lot of fun. Anything that you can do there, that can be good too. But Chad, I know you guys, you ride for the Herbalife Nature's Bakery team.
Yeah, we actually have a lot of structure. Camp coming up, and they're very structured. So in particular, one of them is a 3 or 4 hour ride. And in the midst of it, we're doing a 30-minute Merck style time trial. So no TT bikes. We're just trying to see, you know, with a couple hours in your legs, go all out for 30 minutes. And they're actually going to use that to formulate the team rosters to see who they're going to send to what races in this early season.
No pressure.
Yeah. And then, you know, you ride, get another couple of aerobic endurance after that. And then the next day we're doing like a 4 or 5 hour ride, 10,000 feet of elevation. Obviously it's going to be a big climbing day, but then we have to finish that with some criterium practice, or maybe that's on the third day. Either way, it's a nice combination of all the things that we know we're specifically going to be faced with in these, the next month or two of early season races. So very specific to what we're after.
And two, so with Chad's camp, nationally ranked guys on that team, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think
some of the
place.
Best in the nation. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that is brutal, but they have a coach that's there, and it's very, you know, these guys are trying to win national championships. So that totally do that. Another thing that's fun, I think, to do at the very end of a session, and maybe the end of Saturday, sprinting. Because that's, you can kind of line people up and you can go through that many times.
Yeah, we actually complete one of these rides, one of these long rides with actual sprint simulations. I think there's a loop they have, and we're actually going to practice leading out the entire lead out train.
Yeah, and even a Cat 2 can practice leading out the recreational riders. Mm-hmm. And yep. You can learn too not to drop someone, and it's fun for everybody. And I don't know, there's just so many things. What I wouldn't do is just be like, we're going to do a 2-hour session. We're going to end up at this place for coffee. We'll see you there. Bye-bye, everybody. And then it just breaks off into two groups. Someone gets dropped, and you just kind of, you show up this camp and you just ride by yourself.
Yeah, yeah. My mind in particular boggles with all the possibilities, all the different directions you can take this. But one bit of advice is just to have some very clear structure. And then you've already recognized that you have riders of different capabilities. So just figure out some way to make it mesh and make it feel like a team and not the fast guys versus the slow guys in two separate rides.
John asks, he says, I love the podcast and Trainer Road, and I have a question from listening to the podcast, which is now to settle on a target power to follow at an event. And the event that he brings up, it sounds like it's a big event. It's called Maratona de los Dolomites, so the Marathon of the Dolomites. Good stuff.
Nice accent.
yeah, it looks, I'm not sure. He says it's a 138-kilometer race with 4,300 meters of ascent. So that's a heck of a lot of climbing there. So constantly up or down on one of the 7 mountain passes in the course. I know the course is, this will be my 5th ride in the event. So his question is, how do I settle on a target power or on a power target, normalized power, average power? What do I use? There'll be a big difference between them on this sort of terrain, I think. Look forward to hearing your thoughts and keep up the inspirational work.
So, John, my guess is with climbs of this nature, where you're either, you know, drilling it uphill or bombing downhill, you can get away with pacing unevenly in that you kind of kill the hills and then recover on the downhills. But the fact that it's 138K with quite a lot of climbing means killing the hills is relative to these sort of demands, in which case I don't know that you're going to be climbing much above. Probably the sweet spot is going to be the height of it. I don't know that I would push higher than 90% if you have this much riding to do. So it's kind of up to you to get out there and determine, you know, based on your longer term endurance, what you can get away with. I mean, obviously you're not going to attack these hills at 105% every time and expect to last the whole day. But, you know, whether it's 80% or 90%, it's kind of up to you to decide.
So Chad, what I'm hearing is he probably wouldn't have an overall target for the entire race, but kind of a ceiling for these longer climbs, and saying, because it's a longer race, I'm not going to go above X amount of watts or X percentage.
Yeah. So right? Yeah. And if that's the case, again, I'd probably stick to that 90% upper limit. If you're going to be out there for a long day, pushing these to threshold each time is going to burn you out pretty quickly.
Looks like there's a wide range. I'm looking at that course right now. And you're going to have a fun day on the bike. It's pretty gnarly. It looks like there's a really big climb. Your penultimate climb is huge, and then you end up climbing up and descending to the finish.
Yeah, if these are really long climbs, that's probably going to shift closer to 75, 80% of threshold.
Yeah, it looks like you've got about 10K and then 5K to 10K climbs. So that's pretty decent there. You know, one thing that I could, and it's a lot of climbing with just about 13,000 feet for those of us that are measuring that way. So the one thing I would recommend with this, and I'm not sure, like Chad said, you know, pacing is going to be great. Best bike split is a huge help with this. We mention it pretty regularly. What you can do is plug in your data, plug in this course, and then see what would be ideal for your FTP, or you can see what it would take to meet a certain time goal as well. Looks like everybody from 437 is the KOM, and my goodness, it goes all the way down. You see upwards of 8 hours and not too big of a list there. So big range of time. I would do that. And just the one bit of advice I would have, there's a ride here called the Death Ride that a lot of people do. And it's kind of like a bucket list ride for a lot of people. And it's 128 miles somewhere around there. And you do about 15,000 feet of climbing, just over 15,000. And it's all in Greg LeMond's old stomping grounds here in Reno, Tahoe. And I've done particularly well at that event before, and I honestly blame most of it on my pacing strategy, but also my strategy with any type of stops or anything else. I assume that you're not going to have a SAG vehicle that's going to be providing you support or anything else like that. And if that's the case, the one thing at least that I found that worked for me was I did not stop at the bottom of a climb at the flat before I was going back up again. It's pretty tough to get motivated to go back up there. At the tops, I would only make very quick stops, and I just told myself I would sleep when I was done, or I would eat when I was done. So, but it worked. I had a very good, very good finish there at that thing. So, good luck, man. That looks like a pretty intense event there, John. Yeah, have fun with that one. That covers it for this week. Those are all the questions we have. Thanks for supporting that, or I should say that's all the questions we'll get to. Thanks for sending your questions in this week. You can send them in to support@trainerroad.com. And you can also find this podcast, remember, on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. Thanks again, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.